newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. The glitches are practically gone from the website where people can sign up for health insurance. That's seen as vital to the success of the Affordable Care Act. But those responsible for signing up people are still working to make sure everyone without health insurance enrolls by March 31st. UW Extension Director for La Crosse County, Mary Meehan Strube, talked with Tricia Wavra. She's the Assistant Consortium Manager for the Western Region Enrollment Network, which is working to get people in the area signed up for health insurance. Dana Roble is La Crosse County's Certified Applications Counselor, and Michael Richards is Executive Director of External Affairs for Gunderson Health System. Mary asked Michael Richards what happens to someone who is eligible for the new insurance but chooses not to enroll.
Well, if you're eligible to apply and you don't apply, two things. One, you will be putting yourself at risk of not having insurance if anything were to happen. But from the government side, you are at risk of having to pay a fine for not carrying coverage. And right now it's $95 per person, per adult, and $47.50 per dependent or child for a family total of $285 that the IRS would take out of your payroll if you pay in.
That's a minimal or a low amount for a fine. Do you expect many people to choose that over having to purchase health care?
Well, that's one of the concerns that's out there is why would as we say, the young invincibles under 34 years old pay for a full-scale health insurance plan when they just would have to pay a fine. And some of the people who would have to pay the fine ultimately may not have a tax liability enough to have the IRS to take any money out. So it remains to be seen whether or not it's going to be an effective way to encourage people to purchase insurance.
But I would expect that the risk is something happens, you need health care, and you don't have insurance and maybe not enough funds to cover it.
Right. That's something that we're going to see. People who roll the dice may end up having more debt long term because at the end of the day, they're going to have to pay their bill.
Well, there's been lots of hype in the news about the numbers of people that need to enroll, some that have enrolled. Where are we here in La Crosse County with enrollments and within the Western Region area?
We are approximately, the last time we calculated, about 1,500 individuals we have helped sign up to choose a health plan. That's not including our approximately 3,000 individuals that potentially may be losing their Badger Care as of April 1st because of the federal poverty level changes. So we continue to do enrollments and try to get the word out to get as many people in here before March 31st as we can in order to get them signed up to choose a health plan.
How many are you expecting to lose their coverage come April 1st and need to have to transition to a health plan?
What we have so far is approximately 3,000 in our 8-county consortium that will be losing their Badger Care coverage.
Yeah, but on top of that, we're going to have new people that are going to be getting Medicaid coverage that haven't had that, and you know, just identifying those people on the wait list is going to be, I think, important to offset some of that risk of maybe not a 100% enrollment from the people losing Badger Care.
Are we reaching everyone that you can?
We are definitely doing our best. You know, we've had a Western Region Enrollment Network. We've coordinated with, you know, many different places through our 8-county consortium. We usually meet on a weekly or biweekly basis. The media has been great and been involved in getting the outreach out there when we have mass enrollment events, which we've had throughout most of our 8-county region, and we'll continue to do those up until the end of March.
And this is kind of uncharted territory. I mean, we've never had to do this before. I mean, there has been major enrollment for Badger Care expansion in the past, but with people losing coverage and not only having to get them signed up but get them to understand health insurance has been a struggle. But I think we've done a great job. We haven't had any navigator funding really in this region, so we've had to do this on our own, and I think that's a testament to our community and the different organizations in our community that have kind of pulled together and tried to find the right solution for the people.
The goal was to make sure that young people signed up, but I understand when you listen to the media coverage, you know, across the country, that the 50 to 64-year-olds far outnumber those that are in that younger age bracket. And why is that?
Well, I think there's a couple different reasons for that. One is the people who are 50 to 60 have historically had a little bit more experience with health insurance. They're getting closer to retirement. They also understand the financial implications of potentially not having insurance. So I think that that plays a role into it. And the 34 and under crowd, again, the young invincibles, it's why would I pay for something that I'm not going to use? Because, right, I'm completely healthy and nothing's going to happen to me. And I think that's the difficult message to deliver. The people who have deemed eligible for subsidy and those people who are 50 to 60 have understood this, I think, through the marketplace and have gone through and signed up at higher rates. And so somehow we're going to have to get into those people's minds that it's important to have insurance.
Are you finding the same is true in the La Crosse area, that it's more of the older ages or those that have more years than those who are younger?
I think that initially it started that way. In some of our recent enrollment events, we have seen definitely more of a variety of ages. So we are starting to see some of the younger populations start to come in. Especially the more we're, you know, working with some of the colleges and area schools to get the word out. Many volunteers working at some of the colleges that are spreading the word. So we've definitely seen a little bit of a change. So that's been helpful.
Will that mean the success or failure of the Affordable Care Act?
Well, I think that's too early to tell at this point. But I think when you have just from a standpoint of doing the math, and you have people who are potentially utilizing health care much more than the people who are not, and the people not on the marketplace that are meant there to be there to help offset the subsidy, I think it's going to be very difficult to make it work. I mean, for the long term, because what the driving force of the whole exchange is the subsidy, and you need people to pay the subsidy, and you need people who are not going to use health care still to pay in.
And so ultimately it probably will affect the future cost of health plans then.
Well, I think that's one reason, but when you can't really underwrite who's on your health insurance plan anymore, understand what their needs are, other than maybe your smoking status, but really not much there as there had been in the past. So it's kind of a guesstimate as to who's going to be coming on, and that's a lot of risk to take on.
As you indicated, we're in the last month and there's probably going to be a big push and maybe a rush for people to enroll during the month of March, because April 1st is not too far away. What happens if it gets to be April 1st, April 15th, and I haven't signed up for a plan?
Well, what's going to happen is, unless you have a life-changing event, you would not be eligible to apply through the marketplace until the next enrollment, which would be in November of 2014, in order to receive coverage starting in 2015. So unless you have a life-changing event, it's, you know, you go below the 100% of the federal poverty level and may be eligible for Badger Care, they're going to be out of insurance unless they look for private insurance.
So I would be able to sign up or register for Badger Care or Medicaid after April 1st and be eligible for it?
Yes.
Okay. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Mary Meehan Strube, and today I'm talking with Tricia Wavra, who's the Assistant Consortium Manager with Western Region for Economic Assistance, Dana Roble, a La Crosse County Certified Applications Counselor, and Michael Richards, Executive Director of the External Affairs at Gunderson Health Systems. So we've talked about April 1st. It'll come, it'll go, people needing health care. But in this last month, there's probably going to be a lot of people that have lots of questions. And Dana, I know that you've been involved as a certified applications counselor. What's it like when you meet with someone who's trying to work their way through the system and purchase health care?
Well, the first thing that we like to do is get a good understanding of their circumstance. That's the first question we're going to ask. Do you have insurance? Have you had insurance in the past? Do you understand how it works? At that point, we take them through the website. You know, this is a great opportunity for people who haven't had insurance before, and they, you know, maybe they don't know what they're eligible for. So it's a great opportunity for them to sign up and get in with a plan.
Painless?
Sometimes. Sometimes not so much. But we're here to help, so.
Mm-hmm. What made you decide that you wanted to volunteer and be a certified application counselor?
Well, it was more of a, for me, in my circumstance, I'm working part-time, so for my circumstances, this worked out great for me, but it's just a wonderful way to help people and help people understand mostly how this is going to affect them. So,
and when you serve as a volunteer, roughly how many people do you work with in a day?
It depends, because sometimes it could take an hour, sometimes it could take 20 minutes. Sometimes it could take 2 hours. Mm-hmm. So in a given day, it could be anywhere from 3 to 4 people.
So in essence, it's personalized care to help people look at the health plans that are out there, see what's going to provide the kinds of coverage that they need, figure out their costs, and
absolutely,
possibly get them enrolled?
Absolutely. It's all based on your circumstances and what you want, what you need, what you can afford. And those are all options that we look at.
Tricia, how many certified application counselors do you have in this area?
For the Western region, we have 6 full-time. We had 8, and 2 of them took positions elsewhere. So we have 6 full-time within our 8-county consortium. We also have a high majority of volunteers that have been wonderful working with the community and coming in and outreaching at different sites that to help people. And actually, Dana is one of our certified application counselors that is also does our Badger Care. So she's not a volunteer, but she's one of our employees. But she works very closely with our volunteer staff, and it's been just a great community effort and all the people that have come to help and get the word out.
Mike, you talked about, in some ways, this is a risk for our medical institutions, not, you know, as you look at the health plans that are out there and not necessarily designing plans specific to people, but for a pool of candidates and hoping that we get more young people to offset what might be increased healthcare costs for our older population, how the Affordable Care Act will affect charity or uncompensated care that medical facilities have provided in past years?
I think it's too early to tell. I mean, on one hand, yes, there's risk out there, but this is also an opportunity. We've had a lot of people who have come through our door who have not had access to coverage in the past. Maybe they've been turned down for coverage. So this gives them an opportunity to get subsidized health insurance. So that, I think that's a good thing. And plus, we're getting them through the correct door. Not through the emergency room. They're going to have a primary care provider, and things will be covered. But in terms of charity care and uncompensated care that may come through the door, we're not going to turn anybody away from getting care that they need. But we believe that there will be people who may have missed the deadline that are going to come in. And I think that's why we've invested so much time and energy and working on this to make sure that people knew that the resource is available. And it doesn't matter if they come here or to our competitor in town. It's just, this is a community thing. And I think getting people into the right door, the right care, and understanding the options that are available is very important.
Now, you also have certified application counselors at Gunderson mm-hmm. Health System and at your outlying clinics as well, correct?
Yeah, some of our outlying clinics have certified application counselors. Most of the people that are coming in feed into Gunderson Lutheran Medical Center down on the south side. But we are in a unique position because we serve patients from 3 states. So, and all 3 have a different kind of format for not only their Medicaid program, but for the private insurance. So we've had to train people for Minnesota, we've had to train people for Iowa, and we've had to train people for Wisconsin, just trying to make sure that we have options available.
What was the biggest challenge with that, since you have three different states there?
I think the biggest challenge was making sure everybody was taking the appropriate test, getting when there was problems with the marketplace website, getting our folks the ability to take the test and be counted for that, because we can't just help people, we have to actually be licensed to do that.
Mm-hmm. And are there any numbers available in terms of people who have signed up for the health plans through Gunderson?
Well, Gunderson Health Plan had our first time we've ever had an individual product on the marketplace, and I think that's been successful for us. I mean, we feel like we have over 2,000 people that have signed up for that plan. A good majority of them are getting a subsidy on that plan, and I know nationally we don't know the numbers on how many people have paid, but our rate has been pretty good in terms of that. So people are getting on, they're paying, and I think that they're going through the right channels in terms of their health care right now. So that's good for us.
Mm-hmm. Now, I recently was at a meeting where another agency representative had been working with some individuals who had limited resources and had said that the health plans, when they looked at them and had worked through them, they thought that they were going to be too costly for them. Do you find that as you work with people and looking at plans that they find that they're going to be too costly for them?
It's looking at when people are 400% and below that there is premium tax credits that they may be eligible for. And the ones that we've seen that are under that percentage it's been great. I mean, there's been very affordable health plans that they've been able to choose. Mm-hmm. So for the most part, a majority of the people that we've seen have walked away very happy with, for one, just having insurance, and two, getting those premium tax credits and able to help pay that monthly premium.
I questioned if they had looked but then not done the whole calculation mm-hmm. of cost to determine if there was a tax credit or a potential subsidy available to them.
Absolutely. Yep, because you can look online at the different health plans, but until you go in there and you take a look and work your way through the application, it will give you, before you even pick a plan, you'll be able to see what you're eligible for those premium tax credits, and then which plan would best fit the needs of you or your family.
So where can people go? Who can they contact to find out if they qualify or if they want to sign up or get help with this?
Well, for one, we have the Western Region for our enrollment network website that gives many of our different places, and not only in La Crosse County, but our eight-county consortium will give you the places depending on what city you live in or what is most beneficial or easiest for you to go to for one-on-one help. Or if just information, if they want to do it by paper or get online by themselves and do it. Many different places in our community that have that one-on-one help.
Is there any type of mass enrollment that's planned in the next few weeks?
Yes, we actually have our next mass enrollment in La Crosse County March 17th through the 22nd. And that will be at our administration building in the lower level. It's 400 North 4th Street. And we are open from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. And then we're also going to be opening on Saturday, because we've seen the need of people that are employed that just aren't able to make it during the week. So we've been trying to do one- or two-day evening and weekend events for people to be able to come in that are not able to make those Monday through Friday daytime hours. So we will have that open. It is no appointment necessary. Anybody and everybody can walk in, sit down, and do some one-on-one help with a certified application counselor. We'll be our volunteers that are certified application counselors, along with our some of our employees. So we welcome anybody and everybody. It's kind of our one last hurrah to get people in, get the word out. We'll definitely have some media coverage on it that people can come in and get that one-on-one help.
Are you expecting a large number?
We're hoping. I mean, we continually over through there are eight counties. We've been continually doing mass enrollments where it's been great because all of our certified application counselors have been able to travel from one county to the other to help the other county do mass enrollments. So we've had a really fortunate between our volunteers and our certified application counselors through our eight counties, we've been able to pull all those people in so that we have a number of people here to do those one-on-one applications with people. And hopefully they don't have to wait for very long or they can get in right away. And with the website working better, we're able to get through it faster. And people are able to look and even possibly pick their plan that day, or if they want to take it home and study it and decide what they want to do, they can go back in and choose it at a later time.
And what is the website?
The website is www.healthcare.gov if somebody wants to do that on their own. Mm-hmm. Okay. I encourage people to go online to see what is available. And if you don't have an email address currently, mm-hmm. if you're listening at home today, go to the public library and have somebody help you set up an email address because I think that's very important to start that process.
That's one of the things you have to have, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And you mentioned the regional website.
Yep.
Do you have that
address
where people can find out all the locations?
Absolutely. And that is www.lacrossecounty.org/human services/ACA.
Do you want to repeat that? That's kind of long.
Sure. It's www.lacrossecounty.org/human services/ACA.
And again, what is the date of the mass enrollment? When does that start and run through?
That will be March 17th. It's a Monday through Saturday, March 22nd.
And Mike, is Gunderson planning anything special other than making sure that you have people on board during your regular operating hours?
Yes, and we've been trying to do some outreach with our patients. So when the patients come in and we've noticed that they're either uninsured or on Badger Care, they've been getting notification when they come into the front desk, just that changes are coming and be aware of them. And here are the resources that are available. Just trying to get the word out as much as possible with people, even in departments such as social work and some of the folks who may come into the hospital and are looking for some assistance, we do have staff available that can help them.
Tricia, I know that you've had a large number of volunteers that you're working with, and you have some special individuals who dedicated some time to help to coordinate those volunteers. Who's been instrumental behind making that happen?
Mary and Peter Nelson have been a very large part of working with our community and volunteering their time and coordinating some of the volunteers. They've been an enormous amount of help that has been much appreciated, along with the rest of the volunteers that have put forth their time and their energy into just working with our communities. And we just can't tell them enough how much it's appreciated and how much collaboration we've had with the people in our area.
Now, we're not quite through, the 2013 enrollment that's gone into 2014. But I want you to think about 2015, next year at this kind of time. And, of course, that next enrollment period will start in November of 2014. What factors will impact the plans that are offered for 2015?
I think it's a little too early to tell. I think our health plan is going to monitor this. Again, this is the first time we've had a private insurance product out there. And I think we're also going to look at how this whole enrollment process has gone. I mean, I remember the first meeting that we had with in May. I called the county and I called Mayo and said, I think we need to meet on this. And less than a year later, we've been able to make some pretty good progress. So I think it's a time to digest after the March time period and try to figure out how we can we move forward from there, because I think there's been we'll have a lot learned and that we can share with one another.
Most likely there will be changes.
It's hard to say. I mean, I'm going to defer that to our health plan folks who look at that. But I think from an enrollment standpoint, we might look at things a little bit differently because now these people are a little bit more educated on the topic. But and we're going to have a shorter window of time to get after mm-hmm. people. So it's going to mm-hmm. probably start early.
Biggest lesson that has been learned in this last year?
Well, I think as a society, I think everybody needs to learn about it, insurance a little bit more. I mean, mm-hmm. we talk about the 90s being financial literacy. This is insurance literacy. And for many people, they've never had to worry about their insurance before because their employer provided it to them. This is different. And mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest lesson learned is just the amount of knowledge on insurance. And I think from a community, we need to do a better job of educating.
What else would you like to have covered or shared?
We can't reiterate enough that people need to sign up. If you want to get your insurance by April 1st, you've got to get it by March 15th. And there are resources available, and just have to ask for help.
Absolutely.
Key reminder then, sign up by?
No, later than March 31st in order to meet the deadline. But if they want April 1st coverage, they need to sign up by March 15th.
Tricia Wavra, Dana Roble, and Michael Richards are all working to make sure as many people who are eligible for health insurance through the Affordable Care Act get signed up for it. They were interviewed by UW Extension Director for La Crosse County, Mary Meehan Stroob. People have until March 31st to sign up for health insurance that would start by May 1st of this year. If they miss the deadline, they'll have to buy private insurance or risk going without it until the next enrollment deadline in November, which will cover 2015. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Coming up next, we'll talk with a photographer behind an art exhibit on peace at Viterbo University this month. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find links to places to sign up for health insurance or get more information about when and where you can get more help in signing up for health insurance in the Cooley region. Our site also has archives to other recent editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. What does peace mean to you? This is a question that photographer John Noltner asked dozens of people across Minnesota. He paired their responses with beautiful black and white portraits and created the traveling art exhibit, A Piece of My Mind. It's currently in La Crosse and will be on display at the Viterbo Fine Arts Center through the end of March. World Service of La Crosse, Viterbo University, and Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration have teamed up to bring the exhibit to town. Here to talk about A Piece of My Mind today is John Noltner, a Minneapolis-based photographer and author, and Sandra McCormick, President and CEO of World Services of La Crosse. John, can you first just talk about the origins of this project, why you decided to take it on?
Sure. As a freelance photographer, I'm constantly making choices about how I'm going to spend my time. And while I'll always shoot the projects that put food on the table, I also like to have a project that will give back to the community a little bit. And back about 5 or 6 years ago, I was really frustrated with the dialogue our country was having, the way things got really polarized and seemed like the angry voices were winning the debate. And I really thought I could use my tools, my photography, and my storytelling to provide an alternative, you know, to look at, instead of always looking at the things that separate us, to spend a little time looking at what we share in common.
And was there ever an aha moment when you said, oh, this is what I need to do?
No, there was doubt and questioning along the entire process. I like to say that I started the project like you walk down a foggy path where you can really only see a couple of steps ahead of you. You take a couple of steps and something else is revealed. But as I developed this, you know, it just started out of curiosity and it just slowly built momentum. Maybe the aha moment came when I got to about 30 or 40 interviews and I said, you know, this is kind of something. You know, this is an interesting body of work and some really unique perspectives.
And can you talk about, I guess, what makes up the Peace of My Mind project? It's black and white photography.
Yeah.
And also people sharing their stories.
That's right. When I do these interviews, when I find somebody that I want to talk with, we'll sit down and we'll do an hour-long recorded interview. I sort of guide it based on some really simple questions. And then as a journalist, I'll just listen to what they say and let that guide the conversation. When we're done with that, I'll do a black and white portrait of the person. And so I share these as podcasts online. The exhibit that's at Viterbo, each of the panels, there are 52 panels, one person per panel, and each of them has a large black and white portrait, a small little biography that helps us understand where this person's coming from, and then a 250 or a 300-word excerpt from their interview.
And you work with photos and words. Why do you think that those are the most powerful mediums to share these stories?
You know, I think that a lot of times we have facts and statistics in our head and we know them as knowledge, but we don't really understand them and incorporate them into our lives. And this kind of art, you know, the portraits, the stories, I think are kind of an interesting and gentle way to begin to understand some of those things, to move some of that knowledge into understanding. And, you know, I was trained as a writer and I was trained as a still photographer, and there's something really unique and interesting about these portraits where they're printed larger than life, so you can come and stand 2 feet away from them and stare at them in a way that's inappropriate in real life. But you can really study these people, and where we might come up against someone who's different from us in real life and then sort of shy away from that direct eye contact. You know, these things hang on the wall pretty much at eye level, and you can just sit there and study a person. And there's something kind of inviting about that.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. My guests today are John Noltner, a Minneapolis-based photographer and author who put together the exhibit A Piece of My Mind. Sandra McCormick is president and CEO of World Services of La Crosse. Today, we're talking about A Piece of My Mind, a photography exhibit on display at Viterbo University that explores people's perceptions of peace. So with this exhibit, you feature a huge diverse population of people, diverse culturally and professionally too.
And economically, yeah. And spiritually, yeah. If you wanted a statistically accurate demographic of the part of the world that I live in, this isn't perfect, and that's not the goal. This is not supposed to be a scientific study. This is, after all, art, which means that you can craft a voice and sort of have a little artistic license about how you explore these ideas. But really, what was fascinating to me about this project is the broad range of perspectives. So I've talked to homeless people. Because I think that's a valid perspective on the world. I've also talked to oil company executives, because that's also a valid perspective on the world. There's a journalist that was always a role model for me. His name was Studs Terkel, you know, Chicago Public Radio for a long time. And the first book that I was exposed to that he did was Hard Times. And so these were oral histories about the Great Depression. And he talked to sports stars, and he talked to bankers, and he also talked to truckers and prostitutes. And through these individual stories, it sort of reveals this really broad and rich and human understanding of what that time frame was in our country's history in a way that statistics and facts really can't do. And so Studs has always been my role model, but I'm a photographer, so I thought I'd add pictures.
So what are some of the, you know, overlying themes that you've taken away? And when you look at this project, you know, I mean, it's been around for a few years. I mean, I'm sure you're learning something new every day, but what have you really taken from it? Some overlying themes when it comes to peace.
Yeah. And I have a lot to learn, by the way.
Yeah. But we all do.
Don't we all? Yeah. There are a few themes that sort of come up over and over again that people share in different ways. And, One of them that I love is this notion that, yes, we all can make a difference. You know, you look at Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr., and there aren't many of us that are going to rise up to that level. But there are things that we can do in our day-to-day lives that will make a real and concrete difference in the world. And there are 52 examples of that in the exhibit over at Viterbo. One of the other themes is how often people find their sense of peace in really difficult situations. You know, it's easy to make excuses and say why you can't be peaceful right now or why you can't help in this regard or that regard. And we hope that we'll do better when conditions are perfect. But the truth is that if we wait for conditions to be perfect, we'll never act. And so so that's a theme that comes again and again. And then the other one is related to a story, a Buddhist saying that was shared by a guy named Eric Gibson. And he talks about a saying in his tradition that says, if you look for your own happiness, you're always going to have problems. But if you look for the happiness of others, then there's always interesting work to do. And I was really encouraged and really inspired by how often people said that their sense of peace came as a response to them reaching out to help other people.
Are there certain people you talked with whose stories have really made a significant impact on your life as a result of this project?
There's a couple. Usually I interviewed people one at a time. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of instances where I interviewed people together. One of those is the McDonald sisters, who are biological sisters, as well as Catholic sisters, Catholic nuns in the Sisters of Carondelet in St. Paul. They're all active protesters, peace activists. They've all spent time in prison because of their beliefs. So I interviewed them together because it sort of made sense. But also I interviewed Fred and Judy Barron together, and they're Holocaust survivors. They were in Bergen-Belsen concentration camp together. And so I talked with them a little bit about the lack of absence, the lack of peace, the absence of peace in that experience, and how once they left, they were able to reclaim some of that peace in their lives. But Fred shared a really interesting story with me about the fact that these guards that worked at the camp, they weren't near the front, so the guards had their families that lived just outside of the fence. And so Fred could look through the fence, and he would see the guards who were with their spouses. And he said, by all accounts, they looked like they were good husbands. And then he saw the guards with their children. And he said, from what I could tell, it looked like they were good fathers. Yet when they turned on the inmates, they would treat them like animals in just a brutal situation. And the fact that Fred could recognize any humanity or any goodness at all in these people who were his adversaries, who were in fact trying to have him killed, really has a lot of grace and, in my mind, peace. And I think that if we could do that as a society, we tend to separate things into black and white, and either it's a good guy or it's a bad guy. And once we call them that, there's no exceptions. And everything that we see reinforces that perception. But if we could try a little bit, maybe to find some good in our adversary, or maybe recognize some flaw in the person that we put up on a pedestal, you know, maybe we could be a little bit more honest about things.
And Sandra, I'm wondering, you know, these stories that John is sharing and these themes that he's discovered along the way, why was it that you decided that these messages were important to bring to La Crosse?
Well, the mission of World Services is that of peace. And we approach peace in a very practical kind of way. We do consulting on an international level, and in that work we not only go to various countries with staff of World Services, but we engage expertise from the community. For example, we are now working on a project in Tanzania to improve nursing care, and we're partnered with Winona State University, and they bring their faculty. We work together with their faculty. We're working on a project to improve nursing care for cancer patients in Russia, and we work with the Cancer Center at Gunderson Health System. And we provide opportunities for these people to build relationships with people in the various countries that we work. When you build a relationship with people and get to understand them and understand their culture and, you know, the differences that we've had with places like Russia through the years, it all goes away because you're suddenly friends. I'm currently in communication with people in the Ukraine, where we worked for 5 years. And it's a relief to know that the people that are colleagues and friends that are okay. You know, they're not liking what's going on in their country. They're removing themselves from the actual conflict. But they were happy to tell me that they have received their pay this month. They do have food. They do have heat. They're worried about what's going to happen next month. But the fact that we have the kind of relationship that we're each concerned about each other is very valuable. World Services also brings about 150 people to the United States every year to do study tours. And in bringing those people to the United States, we manage projects in various cities. For example, Serbia may send – we may bring people from Serbia that go to San Diego, California. Those people do stay in homes, and they work with professionals, whatever their professional topic is for their study tour. And all those relationships just the relationships that occur – to me, are all little steps in building peace. I think there's no one that believes we will ever achieve total peace in the world, but anything we can do to make small steps towards that, I think, is very effective.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. Today, we're talking about A Piece of My Mind, a photography exhibit on display at Viterbo University that explores people's perceptions of peace. My guests are Sandra McCormick, President and CEO of World Services of La Crosse, and John Noltner, a Minneapolis-based photographer and author of A Piece of My Mind. Through both of your work, I hear that you want people to understand one another in order to maybe respect, maybe understand each other's differences, and therefore bring about peace.
I think Sandy touched on an important point. When we don't know somebody, when they're a complete stranger to us, it becomes really easy to dismiss them or maybe marginalize them or demonize them. But when you have that sort of people-to-people diplomacy, whether that's with somebody that lives on the same block in your neighborhood who maybe doesn't maintain their lawn very well, or if it's with other countries, when you have that direct knowledge of them and you've built a little bit of a relationship and you know who they are as a human being, it becomes much harder to marginalize them or dismiss them or hate them. And so I think that sort of foundational work, even before you run into any conflict, is really valuable whenever you have the chance to do that.
And finding this definition of peace and these themes, do you find that it's universal, or do you think that each culture or each profession has their own definition of what peace is?
Probably each person has their own definition of what peace is. And the sticking point, you know, it's hard to find someone who wouldn't want a little bit more peace. But the sticking point is that we compartmentalize things so much in our lives. So we will claim to want to get along with our neighbor, but we will make all of these excuses about why it's just not possible. And I always wonder if we're being completely honest with ourselves when we do that.
And Sandra, with the different relationships that you've built abroad, do you feel the same way about that?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, there are things about going into another culture and working that you really have to accept. And sometimes that's difficult because it's simple things like never being on time for things and just the way they approach issues and how they use top-down management. But the important thing, I think, in working in those environments is that we always need to remember that we have to accept where they're at and what their needs are, and it's not about us coming in and giving to them or telling them how to do it. And so, you know, I think that we're both on the same page here. It's about acceptance, understanding, and accepting the differences that exist so that each of us can still be the same kind of people in our own culture, all looking for the same thing, a better life for our children. You know, we're very much the same when it comes down to the bottom line.
I love how such a local project has such a global message.
Yeah. I think relating back to what Sandy just said, there's a really bright individual in the project by the name of Rabbi Marcia Zimmerman. And in her interview, she talks about how we have to get down to what's real. You know, we can't talk about what we hope is the case or what we wish was the case. But at the end of the day, we've got to get down to the reality of the situation we're dealing with and brush all that other stuff aside. And there we can begin a conversation and eventually work up to what our aspirations and hopes are.
John, you said you started this project because you found, you know, a few years ago that the world just seemed so polarized and it was just in this state of chaos. Do you think that after talking with so many people, and I'm sure all the conversations that have come about from this project, is the world truly polarized, or is that just what the media or certain leaders want us to believe?
Well, some of the world is polarized. The loudest voices are polarized. And one of my goals with this project is to try to give voice to the other ones that aren't. Because if those more moderate and more cooperative voices retreat from the debate, well, then all you have that remains are those loud voices. And I didn't want that to be the case.
Have you, John, heard different stories about maybe impacts that this project has had on certain people?
One of the really interesting things for me is I keep in touch with a lot of these people that I've interviewed, and I see a good number of them regularly, and I consider them good friends now. I'm a little touched and a little surprised at how many of these people have said to me what an impact the experience of being interviewed was for them. You know, peace is kind of this nebulous thing in the back of our minds, but when we're asked to articulate it, when we're asked to put those thoughts into words, you know, we have to struggle a little bit, and we really have to understand ourselves a little bit better to do so. So there's that, which is interesting. But then just sort of anecdotally, when I go into schools and do workshops, there's always a little cluster of kids that comes up to me afterwards that want to talk, and usually one that's sort of lingering off in the distance that waits for everybody else to go away. And then they'll come up and say something really simple like, you know, thanks, I really needed to hear this. And sometimes just go away. And you're left to fill in the gaps of what that means. But it touches people. You know, it makes an impact. And I'm still always a little surprised but excited about that.
So, Sandra, World Services of La Crosse has worked with Viterbo and Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration to bring this exhibit here. What are you hoping that people in La Crosse take away from something like this being within our own community?
Well, as I mentioned, you know, the mission of World Services is peace. And I think that by highlighting this kind of approach to understanding world peace is going to touch people in a new way and help them understand that they can be part of peace in the world. And I think that so often people look at it as though it's some very nebulous thing that, you know, they would like to have happen, but don't believe that they have any ability to be part of or impact. And I think we have many ways to be part of world peace, and we can start right at home. We can start in our schools. We can start, you know, in many different ways. So I think that what we're trying to do is to highlight the importance of how peace can begin with each of us.
There are probably a good number of people who come to this exhibit who have an open mind and maybe thinking about that, but how do you get people who maybe could benefit from a project like this and exposure to something like this to come and challenge themselves?
There's always the fear that you're just preaching to the choir, right? That you're saying these things to people who already believe these things. But on the one hand, I think the choir needs encouragement as well. And if the choir feels like they're doing this by themselves, that can be really discouraging, and it can lead to some burnout. But to see all of these stories and feel like other people are working in this direction and to be inspired is a good thing. But I also think that this, you know, this thing hangs in public spaces. You know, it's at the Viterbo Fine Arts Center, and you know, everybody who walks through that building is going to see these large faces in these stories, and maybe they'll take a minute to look at them, and maybe they'll find something that challenges them or a new way of thinking of things. And I don't know what those percentages break down to, but I got to believe that 100% of the people that walk by it are not people who always think about these things.
John Noltner is a Minneapolis-based photographer and author who created the traveling art exhibit, A Piece of My Mind. Sandra McCormick is the president and CEO of World Services of La Crosse. The exhibit is on display through the end of March at the Viterbo Fine Arts Center. A Piece of My Mind is being sponsored by Viterbo University, World Services of La Crosse, and the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find links to podcasts that were produced as part of the Piece of My Mind exhibit. And in an audio extra, John Noltner and Sandra McCormick define what peace means to them. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.